This is part two of our playtest of Moonlight Vale. Let's recap. It's been a couple of weeks. We had to take the previous session off, so we are going to pick up where we left off. But let's take a look at our characters so far. We're still in our tutorial introductory scenario for the game, resolving the oddity job of some goat folk who are causing a bit of rampant chaos around town. Our watchers, as they will come to be known, Hazel Thorne has no conditions, I believe. Yep. Yep. Scott Sweeney, no conditions. But Kai Cooper has cramping your style from your dream removed because Scott was playing the violin or the fiddle, whichever one it was, on the mountainside. Which was all fun and good. As a reminder for our job itself, do we have a tab with the clues on it? No, we don't. Okay. That's okay. I will post the clues in the chat while we figure that out. But as a reminder for the tutorial job that we're doing right now, during the Jellymark Jamboree, a springtime festival celebrating all things jam-based, fruit-oriented concoctions in Crossing Town, a clan of anthropomorphic goat people that we're calling goat folk ended up kind of storming through the area rampantly in a bit of an anxious nibbling phase, one might call it. So you guys are trying to figure out what's going on there. The question that's on the table for this, which is, were the goat folk forced out of their home or did something attract them to Crossing Town? And then answering that unlocks the next appropriate question. I believe we have only one clue for this one. Actually, no, we have two. I believe we have two clues for this because, first, Hazel did the magic move, which we need to actually talk about, like what that might look like as an actual move now for your divination. But you were able to divine a small gathering of goat folk looking towards the skies, if searching for something. And while hiking around the foothills of the Singing Mountains, Kai and Scott came across a cave drawing depicting a squat, bearded creature with angry eyes and a crown, the letters N, O, M, and E written beneath its hairy feet were another thing you found. Presumably that cave was a place where the goat folk had like sheltered during their migration down from the mountains. Who knows? So we have, I believe, two clues for it right now. I don't remember if there were any more than that, but I don't think so. Cool. We did leave off on a particularly interesting note with Scott and Kai on the mountainside overlooking the Vale. Scott had started playing the fiddle to while away the time, and in doing so attracted a group of three skeletons shambling out of a nearby mine entrance, who we established sound like xylophones when they move, just in that like clunky bone way with little miner hats and holding picks.
I mean, so, I think it's irresponsible to assign a causal relationship there. They're just two things that happened in proximity to each other.
Yeah, I think that's correct. That's probably the right way to put it. let's see here. Yeah, let's just start there. Let's just pick up with that scene immediately. So, let's start with Kai, because this is Kai's complication that Scott just happens to be here for. Kai, when you come out of the cave and are walking back, you see these three skeletons shambling out of the mine, like lumbering kind of side to side, that Scott notices as he stops playing the violin. And then all three of them just kind of, after they pause there, there's a little like looking at one another, and then they just go into motion, like just shambling forward with picks raised high above their head. What are you doing?
I think the wise thing to do here would be to run away. So if they haven't cut off our escape route yet, it's like we're just gonna start running and be like, Scott, we gotta go.
Scott, how are you doing? What's your reaction over here?
Yeah, I think there was sort of the like screech of the violin music cutting off when we first see the skeletons come out, and he's just like standing there sort of entranced and frozen while they're coming out. And I think, yeah, like the second or third time Kai yells at him, he sort of snaps out and, oh crap, and turns around and starts running.
Amazing. It's gonna be the night move from the both of you, which will be very fun and interesting. There is a slight wording change to the night move in Moonlight Vale as opposed to other Car from Brindlewood games, which are when you do something dangerous or face something you fear. We say when you do something dangerous or face unexpected hardship, describe what you are worried will happen should you fail or lose your nerve in the face of this. So let's start with you, Kai. What are you worried about happening here?
I'm afraid of getting clubbed to unconsciousness by a bunch of xylophone skeletons.
Xylobones, if you will, yes,
Oh my
naturally.
God, yes.
Xylobones. Okay. And Scott, what are you worried about?
I think honestly, in the moment, he's afraid for his violin. Like it's he had his cases on the ground over there, and he's running through dark woods.
I'm gonna say for Kai, it's worse than that. Because as everyone knows, mind skeletons are notoriously sticky fingered. And they will take your very shiny, very interesting telescope down into the mines with them. For Scott, I think yours is more complicated. Let's see here. I look at your items. Honestly, I think for you it'll be the more physical one of in the it's worse than just simply losing your instrument and getting harm's way. You are in caring so much about your instrument and like being a shell around it, you'll end up being knocked ass over tea kettle and just rolling down the mountains and just like taking a hard run through some brambles and have a really bad night of it.
Yeah,
I
that
think
makes sense.
that makes sense. I think these are both going to be vitality based if you two want to roll.
Oh no.
I don't think cramping your style would give you disadvantage, Guy. I will tell you that. I think your style is suitably cramped and that's not going to hinder running away from some xylobones.
Got an 8.
Eight. And Scott?
Oh, that I think that was my role.
Oh wait, was it?
Oh
Oh,
yeah,
that was.
Kai Cooper rolled a
Oh.
three.
Oh God, yeah, that's a 3.
Oh no.
Oof.
Snake eyes. Oh my God. We're off to a great start. Oh
Let's
no.
cut away to Hazel for a moment. Let's cut away to Hazel. Back in town, you did a little divination exercise. I think you're walking through town again. Let me take a look at my notes here real quick, because yeah, the town's kind of quiet at the moment in the I mean, it is late, but mostly in the aftermath of just everything settling from what was going on last night. You can see that the Jellymark Jamboree is in a bit of a mess. A couple of tables got overturned. There is the fallen kind of banner, a street light that just kind of that fell over as well. Nothing that's overly like dangerous, and people are taking care of it. There's just kind of that attitude of just like, well, shit. Like it's all this is fun. You can see that Marlene had her table up of stuff she brought, and I guess by you as well because you were helping her out. That got fully like overturned, and there were just like jars of various like jams and things she had brought that you had helped, just like broken on the ground, scattered around. And she's just kind of sitting there with like just like picking like up like bits of glass and like scooping up things of jam, just like grumbling and cursing to herself. You can see that Frankie Gonzalez, the local handyman, is going around like he's currently trying to like help get like the lamp post back up. And Dylan Parker, the town doctor, is mostly just checking up on folks as well. Like, there's this kind of like, there's a lot of like familiar faces around. They're just moving about the area. But you know, you're walking through town. What are you doing?
We see that Hazel is walking, and she has like the Admiral on the top, her little toad on top of her fingers, and she's kind of like holding him out, almost like a. Like, you know, like some kind of divination or compass. And she's kind of holding him out towards people. And Shadow Lord is by her feet. And she brings him to her mouth and she says, "Go on, impart me with your wisdom. I do not like the vibes. Check them out for me." And I'll hold him and I'll see like where Shadow Lord is going or where like the Admiral is croaking. And then I want to investigate that person because the vibes are rancid.
It's fascinating. I love this. Okay, great. Yeah, we'll do the exploration move. I want to say, I don't know, I could see you doing this with sensitivity, but I could also see this being a reason thing, depending on if we think they're actually supernatural based powers or if it's just versus like you following threads and vibes. I'm kind of like deferring to you on this, like how you feel about how your familiars work.
I like the thing they're like just regular animals. Yeah. And Marlena's told me like a million times, we're like, no, they're 100% magical.
They're just animals.
No, they're like familiars. And she's like, no, they're pets. No, they're familiars. No, but they're totally just pets.
They're just, okay, then it's going to be plus reason, I think. That's really funny.
Okay, that is fair.
You can mark the Admiral for advantage if you want.
No, I'm just going to roll a 4.
Okay.
Just gonna roll a 4.
So much fun. We're having a great time tonight. Let me take a look at this real quick. Oh, you know what? This is a great time to introduce a little hazard that we haven't had happen yet. It's the Admiral. So the Admiral goes like hopping, like just like down the street. Kind of like hops over a few tables as well. Most people are ignoring it. And then the camera's kind of like following the Admiral as he's hopping and jumping around. And with a big bounding leap off of one of the tables, he soars through the air and lands like right into, like right on top of a man's head as he was like stepping out of like this little like, Crosstown doesn't really have like a hotel. It's more like a lodging house. Like it's just like, you know, there's this guy who steps out who is has this frighteningly bird-like face with beady buzzard eyes, a hawkish nose, and very owly eyebrows, in a tweed jacket with elbow patches. And despite the late hour, he's carrying a clipboard and like kind of tapping it with a pen as he's looking around. And this frog lands right on his head. And he yelps with a start and just says, "What in the name of whoa!" Like, and just like begins like spin around, like throw hands, and like grabs the Admiral off of his head and goes and like throws him to the ground. The Admiral's okay. The Admiral's never hurt by this, but the Admiral's very orbular and just kind of like rolls and like settles to a stop then. But this man's face goes tomato red, or maybe strawberry red, fitting the season. But he is like his head whips like left and then right and then left and then right again. And his eyes settle on the very disheveled looking mayor, who he then stomps over and is just like, "Mayor Limney, I just had a toad fall upon my head. This is most unorthodox." And I will say for simplicity's sake, this is Hank Gibbons, the county assessor. He comes into town infrequently. He is the certified property assessor for the Sunbroom County Department of Taxes and Finance. And he is ruthless into prying into local affairs and always on the lookout for mischiefs and missteps he can report to the county. And you've just now launched a toad on his head and Mayor Limney has her hands full. I think your consequence here is there's going to be a lot of, this just made things a lot more complicated and this is going to cause some problems.
uh, I mean, yeah, I love it. Let's get some trouble in here. I think even though the Admiral is not hurt, Hazel very dramatically falls on her knees next to him and like cradles his little toad body as she picks him up close and she says, "It's okay. He can't hurt you anymore."
Hank Gibbons, like, whirls around and looks at you and says, "Young lady, is this reprehensible thing your pet?"
She stands up, dramatically walks up to him, looks him square in the eyes, and said, "What about it?"
He like taps his pen against his clipboard and like scribbles something down and looks over at the mayor. Mayor Anna is like sitting there, just kind of like wide-eyed, exhausted, but just kind of like she's a little like speechless, not sure how to interject in this. And Mr. Gibbons continues saying, "Mayor Limney, I don't think frogs are on the county's approved list of pets that need to be in public at any given time." He's like scribbling things very like hurriedly, and just says, "Now I'm not certain how one would leash a toad or a frog or whatever amphibious creature this is, but I don't think my officials in Sunbroom County will take lightly to rampant froggery." Like is like just signing that.
The Admiral is not a pet. He is my familiar, and he does not like your spiritual vibe.
Familiar. He kind of like grumbles and like writes something down and kind of gives you a little side eye. And actually Marlene hears you be like, "He is familiar," and she's like, "Nope, nope, not familiar, not a fam just a frog. Just a frog. There
A
is
familiar.
no Nope, there is." Marlene walks over and says, "Hazel, not the time. Mr. Gibbons, it's not a familiar. There ain't no magic going on in town property at the moment. If things are simply fine as they are, please pardon my protege." And she grabs you by the arm and says, "Hazel, darling, can you come help me with the jars?" And yanks you kind of to come talk to her as she like walks around there. Let's cut back over to Kai and Scott. Scott, with your eight, I have great
Hello.
news. I have great news. You truly, we see like Scott just bounding down the mountain trail side, just with like holding his like instrument in his hand, as two of these skeletons are basically just. We watch as they kind of have this weird loping sprint, and then occasionally they'll trip on a rock. Their leg bones will like shatter and fall off, and they'll like roll on the ground and just explode into like a shower of bones, and then reform in that momentum to assemble back together, and then just come running after you. But you are able to with a significantly surprising burst of speed and agility for a tailor's apprentice, you take off. You are gonna take the condition winded.
Skeletons! Somebody! There's skeletons! They're coming! Oh, there's an army of them! Unstoppable numbers!
As you're booking a back towards crossing town, for Kai, with your snake eyes, yeah, I think what's going to happen is like you see that these two go booking after Scott, and you on the other hand just have one, and so you're kind of like evading it. And I think what happens is we see the skeleton just kind of like and like raise its pick and slam it into the rock side. It's like crack begins to like snake its way up along the ridge line up to like a boulder that's overhead and cracks, and then just showers of little pebbles fall and just. You just get knocked on the head, and then just the world goes like starry for a moment as you're just like, whoa, well, bam, you just pass out. You are unconscious. The skeleton we see like walks up, looks at you, looks at your shiny little telescope that you have strapped to your pack, grabs it, pulls it free, sticks it in its eye socket, and then seems to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It tries to pull it out, but it just fully telescopes the lens, and it like begins to like spin around. Its head does a full 360, and it runs into a wall and just fully just like shoves the telescope back into its collapsed state. And the skeleton, confused by what just happened, wanders back deeper into the mines with a little telescope poking out of its eye. You'll lose your item unless you open a gate.
As adorable as that is, I would like to open a gate.
Very fair. Very fair. I will remind everybody that there are your gates of the farm, which are your pass, gates of the town, which is progressive, and then there is the free gate of the potluck for the job as well. Which one would you like to mark?
I will mark the first gate of the farm.
Very nice. Do you want to narrate that now, or do you want to wait a bit?
I have it now. If it makes sense to do, yeah, I guess it could make sense to do it now.
I will say that. I'll say maybe that, like, what happens, and this could be a good, like, transition into it, is that you outrun this skeleton for a while, have a few close calls. You actually, like, you know, you actually are able to leap out of the way of that, like, shower of, like, rocks and pebbles, which the skeleton kind of has to, like, scramble and climb over, but like, a couple of, like, wayward rocks fall down and, like, bonk it in the head, so it kind of just goes through its own little spinal column for a moment, so its head is, like, in its rib cage as it's, like, feel around, like, thunk, pull its head out of itself. But you buy yourself enough time to go running and sprinting, and oh god, whereas Scott got winded, you end up kind of being like, okay, count your breath. Ground collapses beneath you and you go sliding down a shale ridge, tumble, roll, and then hit, take a, not like a hard landing, but a rough one, kind of onto like a lower bit of the trail. And just, okay. You'll take the condition battered and bruised. But when you sit up, you get this like beautiful like overlook of crossing town beneath the moonlight, little like lights as well. And that can segue into your gate.
Yeah. So I think going back to the paint the scene for the crags, I mentioned there were some like floating blue will-o-wisps as well. And I think as Kai goes running through them and tumbling through them, that's our transition point where we see a Kai who actually looks like just a miniature version of this Kai, like just 8 years old, but half the size, same exact, like sort of long to shoulder haircut. In fact, a smaller version of the same like red and black flannel shirt that he's wearing now. He's about 7 or 8 years old and walking through crossing town at night, but it is alive. There are string lights and maybe even just some similar versions of those will-o-wisps just kind of like drifting about. It's autumn. It is the autumnal night market in crossing town. And in fact, I think we see Kai sort of like running because it's his first time he's ever been allowed to just kind of like wander the night market alone without parental supervision. His parents finally deemed him old enough to just kind of like let him cut loose. And I think he actually runs by Hazel. We might see like a younger version of Hazel, maybe even again, kind of similar thing. She's got her a little witchy hat, or maybe this is before she decided to become a witch. I don't know. But Kai is absolutely entranced by all of the visiting peoples. There are wagons set up from people from the city, from other little villages like Crossing Town. And he's assaulted by just like smells of far off spices and songs from that he's not familiar with in tones and cadences that he's never heard before. And he walks up to one of the little wagons, which is like pulled out its side, and you see little like baskets for different foods and fruits from places he hasn't been to yet. And a woman just hands him something that looks kind of like a dragon fruit and says, here, try this. And he bites into it and tastes something far off. And since then, the night market has always been his favorite place, and it began that evening.
I love that. That was great. Hazel, you get pulled aside by Marlene as she is kind of immediately puts you to work. Now, as part of my keeper reaction for your role, it wasn't just having the meddlesome Hank Gibbons show up on the scene, who we'll talk about here a little bit more. I'm actually debating if I want to give you a condition or if I want to do something else. No, I think I'm going to give you a condition. You're going to take Hounded by Hank Gibbons, which makes sense. This meddlesome man. But Marlene pulls you to the side. As you can see that this man is just blusteringly just going off at like Mayor Anna about this. You actually overhear him at one point, just like kind of like, you know, being like, I'm trying to rest with all of this raucous in the background, and suddenly everyone's screaming and their things are falling about, and I would like to know what the meaning of this is. You know, just kind of like in the background as Marlene kind of like takes you further away, and she says, Hazel, darling, I know you mean well, but we gotta be careful when we are talking about magic with folks from the wider counties. These assessors, whatever you call them, they don't take kindly to the more unorthodox measures of our society. Even if things are normal here to us or a little fantastical to you, when your definition of normalcy, it is not the time or the place around them. It is especially not the time or the place when we have a group of mountain kin running amok, and who knows what the county will say about that if they find out that's going on.
Well, that sounds like their problem. Who are they to judge us? Is not a ped, and I will not let him be disrespected as such.
I understand, darling. I do, but you have to also understand that there is an evil in this world, a vast black cesspool of darkness known as bureaucracy. And those representatives of that evil like to come into small, quaint places like this and taint the quaint life we have for ourselves with their rules, their regulations. And the worst thing of all is they actually can do things about it. And I don't like it as one bit as you do, but it's just simply the way things are right now. You don't want to cause problems.
What you're saying is that they're evil and yes, they must be fought and they must be cleansed. Because as witches, we must fight evil and protect us down, shouldn't we?
We protect the balance, yes. And if the situation will call for it, Hazel dear, we will absolutely lay some curses down upon them to make them rue the day they brought their bureaucracy to our little quaint town. But that is not what we're doing right now, because at the moment, Mr. Gibbons over there with his dumb little bird face is just blustering about hithers, thithers, why-fors, and where-tos, and we don't need to put more on his radar that he can complain about. Hazel, she looks at you very seriously. Like, this is, like, a lot of the time she's pretty sassy, but she gives you a serious look, and she says, Hazel, the Vale is a deeply ancient and magical place. There are things in this world, man-made things, that would try to abuse and exploit the things that can be found here. And she kind of like then side eyes, looking down the lane, a man everyone in town knows, a man in his early 30s, dressed in a very like crisp business attire, dark hair combed back, starting to like gray at the temples, John Miller, the manager of the Mojo Mart, the local representative of Mojo Corp. Kind of like side eyes him, like with like this withering glare as she's saying this, and just says, and we don't need them to have more reason to come prying into our business. You understand, dear?
Very well. I shall prepare my curses in silence and unleash hell when it is appropriate.
Atta girl. She pats you on the head. Now help me clean these jars. And she starts sweeping things up. And she's just like, she's looking at all of her ruins. And she's like, curse my luck thrice and crack every mirror I gander. You know how hard these honey plum preserves were to make this year? A real kick in the tush.
A real kick in the tush. Do you know anything about these goats? Grandma used to tell me stories about them, but I'm sure you would know even more.
Make the exploration move plus presence.
Elliot. Okay, revenge is had. That is a 12.
Oh, this is perfect. We get our first supernatural clue. This is fantastic. Okay, I'm so excited now. Okay, this is actually, I was gonna say, like, let's end the night phase after this scene. And honestly, it's perfect that we do this. Yeah, let me take a look at my clues list. I'll give you a regular clue, then I'll look at my supernatural ones. Do you know anything about these goats folk? Marlene will say, I don't know much. They spend a lot of their they live far north in the Singing Mountains. They don't really come down. A lot of folks have actually probably forgotten about them, to be truth. You know, it is it's a little known fact, actually, that the goat folk are descended from the relatively fierce and competitive minotaurs of the Northern Isles. Distant cousins, but you know, they're not really known for battle acuity. They're not really violent folk, but you know, bovine kin harbor surprising strength, which makes it all the weirder that they'd be blundering through town such as this. I don't get it. That is your clue. I can kind of copy that in the chat here. As for your supernatural clue, this is our first one. And the first supernatural clue is always the same thing, which is the spirit's first appearance in the story. I think as you're helping her and she's like kind of like sweeping up and you're talking about things, she gives you a serious look again, like kind of like looks to you. I think actually this is actually like on, you're like helping her carry her belongings and her wheelbarrow back out of town along the trail towards her cottage for the evening. And like we see that her like set the wheelbarrow down outside of her house, kind of like, you know, walking up to the porch, you know, wiping her hands and just hands on her hips as well. Yeah, that'll do it. Thank you, darling. Appreciate your help.
Of course.
Yeah. You remember what I said. Keep it in mind.
I remember.
No.
Keep it in mind.
Hazel, I mean it. This is, if anything, one of the more important things I've ever told you. Things okay. In the veil are changing. And I'm not sure for the better yet, but I have a responsibility to the forces of this place. And I don't hold you to those same responsibilities, but I do expect you to do your part. She kind of actually like holds her hand out. And what at first looks like a little spring blossom falling from a tree as it floats through the air, it lands on her hand and then glows bright in the moonlight. And for a brief moment, this single rose, like cherry blossom, turns into a furtive, glowing little flower petal with dragonfly-like wings that then quickly flits off of her hand, and you watch that fly into the darkness of the night. And then she looks at you and she says, "The spirits of the veil are with us always, Hazel." And then she bids you good night. Let's end the night. Before we go into the day, I should have done this earlier, but it works now. Hazel, your move is a beginning of session thing that we got to talk about. Would you care to read your move?
Absolutely. Laylooker. The world is covered in an ancient network of arcane pathways hidden from the naked eye called ley lines. While you are no master of magic, you have learned to study these lines and gain some degree of power through reading them. At the beginning of each session, the keeper will frame a scene where you wander outdoors, divining what paths the lines will take and gain a boon. Choose what form it takes from the list below.
Mm-hmm.
I can take an advantage on roles involving the magic move, a clue for an active job. I can tell the keeper what it is. The next time a watcher rolls the exploration move, you can grant them a 12 plus by explaining how the ley lines reveal a supernatural clue, or I can conjure mundane magical effects such as puffs of smoke, chromatic sparkles, convincing sounds, acts of ledger domain, or
yeah.
whatever you can, ledger domain, or whatever you can come up with. Additionally, you do not lower your sensitivity when you mark the Ivy Tunnel, and it gives me some extra responsibilities as well.
When we get into that, yeah, we'll explore that.
Yep.
I mean, I think it's the following morning, and we just see Hazel, like, walking through the Endless Weald, kind of. I imagine she has, like, a, like, toast in mouth anime kind of, kind of like walking around the morning trails and all that as the spring life is blossoming all around. Flower petals that open to greet the morning sun, animals and critters running about the undergrowth and scrambling up trees and all that. And the ley lines hum with a rejuvenating energy. What boon would you like to take?
Let's see. I think the next time a watcher rolls the exploration move, I can grant them a 12 plus.
Excellent.
By explaining how the ley lines reveal a supernatural.
Love that. Keep that on reserve. Before we start talking about how things are going this following day, I will say that we currently have 3 clues for the complexity 2 question. Do you want to take a crack at answering that now, or would you like to gather more before attempting to?
And what exactly is the question?
Oh, that's right. Let me pull it up again. Were the goat folk forced out of their home, or did something attract them to crossing town? Complexity 2. I'll put this in the keeper for us. So how do we feel? Do we want to answer that now, or do you want to hold off?
I'm fine answering it now. I don't necessarily have a concrete theory.
If we want to take, if we do want to answer it, we'll put us on break for a few minutes so you guys can mull over it. But if you'd rather get more clues to inform your ideas, that's fine. Just kind of want to get the vibe.
I'm fine either way. I don't have a solid idea, but maybe in 5 minutes I will have one.
Let's go ahead and try answering the first question and, you know.
Yeah, like, and go from there. Then, because I mean, like, worst case scenario, if you get the theory wrong, it just means the other answer is correct because it's the threshold question. Then we'll just go from there. Anyway, let's take 5. And when we come back, I'll hear your theory.
All right.
All right. So the first question is to determine whether the goat folk were pushed out of their home or if they were drawn to the town by something. Complexity 2, we currently have 3 clues for that. A small gathering of goat folk looking towards the skies of searching for something, crude drawings of the N-O-M-E, the gnome. And it is a little known fact that the goat folk are descended from minotaurs. They harbor strength, even though they're not particularly combative as a kin. Anyone want to kick off a theory?
I have an idea. So I think that they were forced out. And I think them looking at the sky is sort of, you know, like them first seeing that something is wrong, whether that's an omen or the actual creature, we may not yet know, but like that's them realizing something is wrong. And I think the crude drawings are of some kind of, for them, a mythical creature that is set to, you know, be like some sort of curse that can recur, or like some kind of prophecy where this creature is there to, you know, like fight them or destroy them. And I think the little known fact about the goat folk, it's more about their connections to the minotaurs. I think that they have like some sort of like mythical evil minotaur spirit that is like this big scary thing that they, even though they're so strong, like they're not strong enough for that. It's like this remnant of what they once were, of like that connection and these battles that maybe have taken place. And they believe that this creature has returned and they need to leave because of that.
I don't have much to add. I also think that they're being pushed out. I also I was nodding at like the looking at the sky might be more of an omen than they were looking than they were searching for something. The only thing that I think I might contribute here is if we're going to use all three clues, then I wonder with that Minotaur background, I wonder if they've been forced out before, and that's why they know. That's why they know to look for omens in the skies, or that's why they might have a legend about this. This thing is, yeah. I wonder if there's if they've had a history of being pushed out before. When they were more closely connected to the Minotaurs.
I was sort of wondering with that, like the remnants and the ancient past of the goat folk, if this thing moving in, if like those skeletons that we saw were maybe like goat folk skeletons. And you know, that's they've been driven out of where they were. That Minotaur lineage talks about they have great strength but not any sort of battle acuity, and as we saw, like you can smash these skeletons over and over again, but they just sort of come back together. So that may have been what part of what drove them out.
Oh, that's fun.
Trying not to get like too dark necromancy. No, but we have skeletons.
Yeah, they have, the bones had to come from somewhere. I like that. That's cool. Okay. Any other thoughts on that? But like otherwise, I mean, like how are we feeling about that, Kevin, Jazzy?
Yeah. I'm happy with, you know, with the clues that we have, and it seems that we're all in agreement that like they've mm-hmm. been forced out.
Yeah. And it just seems like that the vibe, just so I understand the sentence, is that they've been forced out, and like so looking at the sky was like there was like an omen that they were like searching for or taking note of. And then basically they've been so like, what are we saying? Force them out again?
I don't think that's clearly defined. I don't think we know okay. yet. They were just, I was actually kind of wondering if that was going to be the next question.
It's not, but it's one of those things where it's like, if it's not clearly defined, it doesn't necessarily have to be. It could just be like something that's a bit more vague. But if we, but yeah, you know,
we could tie it to this weird gnome mm-hmm. creature as either a like harbinger of the thing or the thing mm-hmm. itself.
Okay, so just driven out then. Okay, and that they're I like that. And that the omen. So what do we think that omen is? That they're like, you know, that what like what was like? What do we mean by that? With them looking at like the sky.
I kind of want to say maybe the sun, like it was sunset or sunrise, mm-hmm. and the rays of the sun were coloring red and forming a labyrinth. Or like a maze in the sky, sort of connecting them back to that Minotaur.
Interesting. Okay.
Legacy.
I'm into that. I think that's fun.
I'm down.
Whoever wants to roll can do it at plus one.
I have a Will Wheaton curse, so somebody else, please.
I can't.
Scott, do it.
We're plus one. That's a nine.
That's a nine. That is correct. I might introduce some little complications to that, but it is correct, which unlocks the next question. If they were forced out, where are they trying to go? You can then resolve the job by helping the goat folk find their new home safely away from the troubles of human civilization. That's complexity four. So let me add that to the sheet. Oh, you got it. Awesome. You're great.
You can add in the opportunity.
Yeah, I will. All right. Well, then let's frame up some scenes for the following day in Crossing Town. Let's focus on Kai for a moment. How does Kai start his day? Battered and bruised, style cramped.
So I think we see Kai like come out of the house on the mountain with like a piece of cinnamon raisin toast, just like in his mouth, a cup of coffee in one hand and the leash for Lucky, his Goldie, in the other. And we are just going to start out the day just like taking Lucky for a walk. But I think because we're in the middle of this investigation and we know about the the goat folk, I think we are going to try. We looked at the mountain. Is there like in the Endless Weald, is there like a lake nearby?
There is the lake, the Forgotten Lake, which is this which is the big lake south of town.
Yeah, let's go take a meander around there.
Okay.
And see if maybe we can find, or at least eliminate the possibility that they, you know, that that's where the goat folk want to go.
Mm-hmm. How does Scott start his day? And what are his plans?
So I have to, like, go into work.
Oh yeah, because that's right. You do. Oh man, actually, that's great. Let me frame that up for you then, because I have there's stuff about Ariadne's loom for the job itself.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I think when you show up at Ariadne's loom for work, when you come in through the front door, oh, and yes, answer Kevin in the chat here. There are ways of air conditioned. It's the vulnerable move, or we call it the community move. So you can do that. That's always on the table if anyone wants to do community move scenes. But,
oh, and I think just as he shows up with my condition there, Scott is just like weirdly out of breath and like a little sweaty and is like massaging his thigh muscles like when he gets in there and he's sort of standing trying to work out the kinks.
Yeah, because it's got a hell of a Charlie horse going on. Well, when you show up to work, you come in through the front door and Ariadne's loom, there are bolts of colorful cloth and string, piles of ruined clothes, threads stretched apart from the seams, thoroughly nibbled mannequins broken at their bases. It looks like looks like the goat folk may have come in here and had their way with a bunch of the clothing here. Let's paint the scene about this place. Mary Lee has owned and operated Ariadne's loom for years and offers the clothing store in. Oh yeah, and offers the only clothing store and tailoring service in town that isn't Mojo Mart. What did you need the last time you came here?
Hazel needed her cloak repaired because she insists on walking around the woods with this, you know, very dramatic robe and this very dramatic cloak, which Merlina has told her is not a good idea. And it like gets caught in all the branches and the thorns and everything. And it really sucks, but it looks cool. So she has to get it repaired frequently.
I think we see Scott like a couple years younger. And on spring break, he's visiting for like a spring festival here in Crossing Town. It's the first time he's been to Crossing Town. And so, of course, he comes like desperately running into the tailor's shop, trying to find whoever's there. He finds Mary and he holds out his leather jacket, which is just like shining and beautiful and immaculate, except for like one part of it that's just like mud streaked down. He's help, help, help. Do you have any sort of leather cleaner? I just need to take care of this before anything sets in. Can you help me with this? Just desperate to try and fix his coat.
Kai's mom, likes to crochet, and so like last winter or autumn, Kai just needed to go pick up a bolt of a bolt of some wool from her.
Very good. Well, Scott, when you enter, you just see Mary looking around, frazzled, just being like, this is a disaster, an unmitigated disaster.
Oh no, the cottons, oh, the bolts, oh, all the threads.
Scott, you're freaking out right now, and that's making me freak out even more right now, so please stop freaking out!
I'm sorry, I'm not freaking out, I'm just having a reaction, a normal reaction to things that are happening.
I feel like your normal reaction is freaking out a little bit, Scott, and you need to take a deep breath, because I feel like I'm about to pass out from freaking
out! You're talking
out.
Very loud, very quickly, and I'm just trying to match, the energy is sort of infectious.
And Hazel, let's cut over to you for a moment. How are you... What are you doing with your day after your walk through the forest? Actually, if you don't have an idea, I have something I can queue up for you.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I feel like maybe your morning wandering takes you somewhere you actually like probably maybe have been to before, but never frequently. It's almost like you forget this place exists all the time. There is a large plot of land at the edge of the forest. Kind of like this bridge between crossing town and the valley itself, where there is this old abandoned farm. The earth and stream running through it, bathed in subtle magics, as you'd be able to tell with the ley lines. Certain types of plants that you've never seen anywhere else in the valley seem to grow here. And maybe in previous wanderings, you've known animals reveal otherwise hidden secrets on this land. There's this old kind of like uninhabited farmhouse that just stands alone, a little dilapidated. Let's paint the scene. The farm is a liminal space. How do the strange and the mundane interact here in ways that are not seen anywhere else in the valley?
I think there are all the flowers here are just slightly different than they would be somewhere else. You know, like all the sunflowers seem bigger and higher, and they seem to reach not only to the sun, but a direction that's always slightly off. And all the ivy grows much greener and much thicker than it would somewhere else. And it's almost like something is infusing these plants with colors and brightness and a vivacity that, even though the rest of the woods are also, you know, wealthy in its greenery and its beauty, it's like it's here, it's more concentrated.
To kind of build off of that, I think there are actually little pixies that come out of the forest at night. And while the rest of the world has this myth or superstition that pixies paint the flowers, here it can actually, at the turning of the seasons, be observed. You see little pixies come out with little teeny tiny paint buckets and little brushes, and they paint every petal, every flower, every leaf. And when it's time for the seasons to change, they'll just like a swarm of fireflies, only in this case, it's actually pixies, will come out and like paint the leaves red and paint the flowers all their different colors.
So I think there's a part of the garden right next to the farmhouse. Where they've, you know, it's not just like vegetables and herbs. There's like a flower part of the garden with all of these really vibrant flowers, and they've made in a wheel like a strangely accurate flower clock, where like every hour, sort of almost on the hour, there's a different bush or set of flowers in a different position around the circle, that sort of like the blossoms open and sort of become more vibrant, and at a certain hour like a flock of starlings will come in and feed off of one bush, and then the next hour bees will come in and like gather pollen from the thing, and then the next hour like these moths will come in and descend on a different bush. And you can just watch this progression around the circle through the course of the day.
So Hazel, what are you doing as you wander into this space?
Yeah, I think Merlene's, not so much her words, but the seriousness of which she delivered them actually made quite a big impression on Hazel, knowing that Merlene is, you know, like, she'll try to teach her things, but it's very much, you know, there's that sassiness, there's like this constant push and pull. And I think she's looking around this beautiful place and realizing, maybe not for the first time, but at least very deeply, that she would be very sad if someone were to take this from her or were to upset this place somehow. And she kind of starts just walking around, just feeling the magic in this place. And she's thinking about the goat folk. And for a moment, just feels very sad that they have to leave and that they don't have a place yet. And I think, like, as she's sort of just thinking about that, she's starting to wonder, well, maybe this is a place. And she's sort of like trying to see if there's, you know, if they could stay here, or like trying to go over in her mind, like, where could they go? How could I help them? As she's just sort of wandering through these beautiful flowers and this meadow, and toward, I think, almost subconsciously towards the farm.
I kind of love that. That's really cool. If you want this to be the exploration move to see if you can get some clues from it, I think it would be plus your reason. As much as I want Hank Gibbons to just show up in the scene, I don't. I think for now, I'll leave it flat.
Just pops up from behind.
Just like, there you
younger
are.
Lady.
You'll rue the day you cross the Department of Tax and Finance.
Well, that is another four.
Jesus. I'm not going to do anything today.
Except narrate Gates, I guess.
Apparently.
Maybe.
I'll think on that and come back to you. Yeah, the die roller is really mean to you guys today. Kai, you're walking Lucky down by the lake. It's a long walk, but you know what? Golden retrievers love that kind of stuff. So let's talk about the Forgotten Lake for a moment. Despite its name, everyone goes there. The Forgotten Lake. Night or day, the lake is covered in thick fog, obscuring both the far bank and whatever lies beneath the surface. Fish are plentiful, if possessing strange properties at times, and islands rise from beneath the water when the moon is full. Those brave enough to swim here note that the lake is much deeper than it seems, and what little light pierces through the murky depths reveal dozens, if not hundreds, of old drowned buildings. Let's paint the scene. How can you tell that someone, many someones, still live in the depths below? Yes, deeper lake. Here, I'll post the question in chat.
Which one?
Like,
Go ahead.
So I think we see sort of similar to before. We see a little swarm, flock, what do you call a group of tiny octopuses? I don't know. Under the water, sort of flowing and swimming together, and they are sort of blinking and flashing their lights in these like sort of V-shaped patterns that go travel down the whole group of them as they seem to be sort of playing up here in the surface, and then just glowing almost too deep and dark to see, There is a reply of like a giant version of this glow down there that just briefly outlines this like huge form of an octopus with long tentacles down in the deep parts of the lake.
I think there are these tree trunks that have been rooted very deep down, as if this, you know, was once a place that was not underwater and then something happened and now it is. And instead of ivy going up the trunks, it's just like shells, all these shells, almost like fairy banks around this water tree. And I think that we see, if you look very well, it almost looks like it's just like tiny shrimp, but it's little creatures, little water pixies that make their homes in these shells and have their own whole city and civilization down there.
And talking about how the islands come up at night. I think this civilization, I think they wear lily pads as hats. And so every now and then you'll find a lily pad. And if you pick it up and turn it over in the way that Kai knows that there are people living here, is they've been modified so that you can actually tie them around your head like a little bonnet.
That's so cute. Oh, Meg's going to freak out when she watches this later. Love that. I think that there are not many people out this early when you're probably giving Lucky a walk. It's kind of got that like early morning spring, like briskness. It's very foggy, but it's a clear blue sky. It's a couple clouds, but the air has got a chill to it. And you know what? For shits and giggles, why not? Like, we've talked a little bit in the chat between the weeks that there might actually be a character relation here because of the same surname, but the town's priest, Eli Cooper, is kind of hanging out by the banks of the lake this morning. We talked a little bit about, we realized that you have the same surname as this NPC. I don't know what the vibe is on relation, what you feel like you might want to do there, if anything. But as a vibe, I will narrate that Eli Cooper dark-eyed, very kind of like casual clothing. I imagine like a sweater over top, like a button-up, kind of like dark navy blue sweater, dark hair, and they wear a carved totem necklace dedicated to Wunna, the patron goddess of nature, for the Vale. Yeah, what do you think, Kevin?
I like to think they're brothers. Similar in age, and I think they're kind of each other's antithesis. Eli fell in love with the town and, you know, put down roots, moved out of the house. Kai still lives with the parents. And Eli wants to, you know, continue helping the town, wants to make the town a better place. And Kai wants to leave. And so the two have a not hostile relationship, but they are both aware of each other's, I think, proclivities. I think that's also why Kai probably knew to come to the lake is, you know, probably a place they both spent a great deal of their youth. Probably Lucky is very familiar with this walk, as long as it might be.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like Eli is just standing at the on kind of like the pebbly banks of the lake, looking out over the morning mists, looks over their shoulder, gives you, you know, a you know, they always have a kind face that's, you know, more than a little mysterious, but, you know, nothing overbearing. Just kind of like nods at you, looks at Lucky with like a slight smile. And I imagine Lucky wants to like run up and Eli kneels down to give Lucky some pets. Yeah, you come walking up. What do you do?
Hey, it's just the person I wanted to see.
Good morning.
Good morning. This isn't about Val, actually. I'm looking into this goat foot thing. Maybe you've heard about it, and I just want to know if you've heard anything about them, or I think they might be trying to leave the mountains and trying to get somewhere, but I don't even have the nearest leads on where to go. And I think, like, as Kai, like, is sort of walking towards him, you know, catching up to Lucky, I think he, like, kind of stumbles or, like, limps a bit and just goes, ah.
Yeah, Eli, they kind of, like, look concerned at your well-being for a moment, and they, like walk over and say, are you feeling all right, Kai?
I was just up in the mountains last night. It was dark.
That seems very dangerous of you.
Yeah, I know. I'm not usually a risk taker, but
you should go talk to Dylan. Maybe he can take a look at that.
You know, I don't want to be a bother. It's
Eli kind of like smiles and says, Kai, he's literally our town's only doctor. It's either that or figure it out yourself. And I don't think that's necessarily the smart choice to make.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Can I ask, Kai, why are you so interested in these mountain kin? I don't understand much about them myself, but you seem very suddenly passionate about them.
I don't really think
I've ever seen this from you before.
Yeah, it's a bit of a different feeling. Maybe I can relate to needing to leave, to feeling forced out. I don't really know yet. It's just, I don't know. I feel a sense of purpose all of a sudden. Isn't it great?
I would say that it is great. I mean, not to be particularly preachy, but Wanna does look after the people of this vale, provides opportunities to not only protect themselves, but others, and I'm happy that you feel bolstered to care a little bit more about something here in that way. I can understand anxiety in the face of uncertainty. I mean, it's been many long years since anyone in Crossing Town has interacted with folk outside of our own. I think we would do well to remember that the Vale is home to many kind kin, and Wanna watches over us all. I am praying to the Mother of the Valley that this all ends well. You can go ahead and roll exploration plus your presence. With this advantage, I think more so from cramped style than battered and bruised, because honestly, you're just kind of in a vibe, I would say. Unless this is where Hazel wishes to use her automatic 12 plus boon that she got.
Interesting. I would say that before the roll.
I would say so you can choose to make that before the roll, yeah. Like, you can choose to just bestow that. But I mean, I'll be flexible on it. I'll allow you to replace it with, if you want to roll, then replace it afterwards, you could. I'll be nice.
I'll leave it up to Kevin.
Well, let's take a look at the roll. It's with disadvantage and a minus one. This can only end well. Okay. 3 and 4 is 7. Minus one would be a 6.
I leave it up to you. Do you want 12 instead, or do you want to do more gates or see what the failure is?
You know, a 12 would be nice here.
All right.
Cool.
Yeah.
You have to describe, I believe, how because it'll give like a 12 plus. The ley lines will manifest a supernatural clue in some way. I'll provide the supernatural clue, but you can decide how that manifests in the scene. I'll carry this as if you got a regular clue though. First of all,
mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh yeah, this is. I'm looking at the clues I wrote, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good one. I wrote that, I guess. Eli says, "Here, walk with me for a moment," and like just kind of like walks along the shore and says, "Now I know you didn't pay particular attention to town history growing up, learning at the library."
Yeah, rub it in.
I'm doing nothing of the sort. I'm simply observing what is factually true. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. People learn differently. People take interest in different things, especially as children. We are always so drawn to very specific things and so easily repelled by others. It's not a flaw of yours to have taken an interest in other aspects of your life. I'm only a little hurt that you think I would be rubbing that in, but I apologize nonetheless. But it's not something people often remember. Indeed, there are some photographs in the library, but last I saw them, they've been gathering dust. Did you know that when Crossing Town was founded, it was not only humans that came to settle here and help build the first foundations of our town? There are goat folks among them. You can check the old photos. Pioneers of different kins who had come down from the mountains and helped the people of Crossing Town build, well, their first settlement. I don't know what happened to them after that, but I always thought that was interesting. Multiple different kin coming together to build a town. And we don't see them here today anymore. Perhaps maybe that's why people don't take an interest in the town history like yourself sometimes. We don't remember enough of our own history to make it worth remembering. I apologize, Kai. I don't mean to ramble on about that.
No, this is great. Thanks. You're the better of us. This is just what I needed. And Kai is going to go, come on, Lucky, let's go. And like start running back towards town. I don't necessarily know what Kai knows, but in the quantum of like arranging clues later.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Let's talk about that supernatural clue though. And I want to hear how Jazzy thinks this manifests. Now I get to give a clue for my actual list of spirit clues. Let's see what we have here. What makes the most sense? Oh, shoot. These are all so good. I don't know which one to pick. Meg wrote these, and I always look at these and I'm like, ah! These are all so weird. So I'm going to leave. So I'm excited for Jazzy to explain how this manifests. Honestly, this actually fits perfectly in here. I don't know. I'm going to just narrate the clue. I say what the clue is, and I'll let Jazzy, you kind of establish how this might manifest, because I actually don't know how this would manifest in the scene. It is pieces of the contract between Crossing Town's founders and the town spirits. So I don't know how that manifests in the scene, but I think that's very appropriate for what just happened and what just played out. And if anyone has ideas they want to throw into that mix as well, I'd love to hear how the ley lines subtly reveal this supernatural clue to Kai at some point.
Yeah, I think maybe that's part of like what makes Kai go like, oh, I got something. And even though maybe you're not even sure, Kai is not even sure, there was that flash of inspiration there. And I think as you start running, you run over the ley lines and we see, you know, like your footprint. And when you lift your foot up and you keep running in the dirt, there are like not necessarily words, but almost like runes that are just like growing up in plants, like you unrevealed them. And when you run past the lake, we see some of the water slush over, and again sort of revealing under the earth these ancient contracts, this almost like this magical contract that has been made that is in the soil, in the very fabric of Moonlight Vale, is slowly being revealed, whether you notice it or not.
Very cool. Let's go back to Scott. where do we find Scott now after that freak out when he arrived at work?
So I think things are a little calmer there in the shop, but they're all like busily working to clean things up. And just because everybody else got to have an animal scene, I think Scott's parrot, Serger, he's grabbed him to bring him into the shop because Serger is very good at finding little shiny things like buttons and beads and little jewels and things and sorting them into piles on a table over in the corner. So we just see him like flapping around, and anytime anyone else comes near any sort of like buttons or things that he wants to sort, like he caws at them and does big wings and like tries to scare them off because these are his shinies.
Oh, that's so cute. I love that.
But I think Mary's there, and I'd be saying, has this sort of thing happened before? I mean, those
no!
goat people seemed wild.
I as far as I can recall, nothing like this has ever happened before. I was talking with Bo last night. Bo is her husband, and just being like, and frankly, I thought the whole thing was kind of ridiculous. But I mean, right in front of our own eyes, it's just suddenly happening, and I don't know, they're making a mess of everything, Scott. My silks!
Do any of the, what did you call, mountain kin come down to the town much at all?
No, not as far as I can remember in my lifetime. I know very little about these mountain kin. I don't know. I don't know. She like throws her hands up being like, I look like I have the time to think about what I know right now, Scott?
Well, I think at the very least we know that they prefer cotton over synthetic, as he holds up like one bolt of cotton fabric, which is just like little scraps, and a like shiny bolt of nylon fabric that has like one nibble taken out of it. And
she's like, oh, thank God. She says with such withering sarcasm.
So, windbreakers for everyone?
She rolls her eyes. The kind of like front doorbell, like ding-a-ling-ling, kind of like walks in, and like Frankie, the local handyman, kind of like walks in. Frankie is in his late 20s. He's a man like with like very functional muscle underneath like worker's clothes. He kind of like wears like a boiler jumper. He always kind of looks like he has got dirt under his fingernails. He just kind of goes, afternoon, Mary. Hey, Scott.
hi, Frankie.
He kind of like walks in, just he's got some like stuff to like come in like help repair things. He begin to like take these like broken and fallen over mannequins, and is just like he's putting things back together where he can. Mary kind of called him in. He's kind of like the, you know, carpenter, landscaper, general jack of all trades in Crossing Town. Mary's like, oh, hi, thank you, Frankie, thank you so much. And Frankie's like, oh, it's really no trouble at all. Hey, Scott, can I get a hand here for a second?
Sure, yeah, I can. Do you need me to hold that for you?
Yeah, that would be great, thank you so much. Kind of helping him out there. Go ahead.
Wow, you're really good at that.
Well, I mean, someone's gotta be.
It's just, I get confused around tools a lot of the time. I work with smaller fabric, softer. That's a good job.
Well, thank you. What confuses you about tools? Maybe I could give you some pointers or advice. And I don't know really that much about silks, but I'm sure that I'd probably I'm sure Izzy is his 4-year-old daughter. He's like, I'm sure Izzy would love something about that. Maybe you help me, I help you. I don't know.
Actually, now that you mention it, I had to leave behind a lot of stuff when I moved here, and I don't really have a good sewing table at my apartment. I mean, I have like a fold-out table, but it's sort of like, you know, the machine makes it go. It's not big enough. But if you could like show me how to make something like that,
make like a table. You want like a sturdier table?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, I can easily help you with that, Scott. Like, I'm more than happy to make a table for you, man.
Oh well, yeah. Or I could help you with it. I mean, I don't want you to like go to any trouble or anything.
It's no trouble at all. I really don't mind. I mean, when I don't have things to preoccupy me, I'm more than happy to help out where I can. Yeah, 2,000 gold and 1,000 pieces of wood, and I'll make a table for you.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, I mean, I could help preoccupy you. I mean, if you could help, that'd be great.
I think Mary just like rolls her eyes even bigger and just goes, I'm going in the back. And she just walks into the back of the shop. let's cut over back to Hazel, because you rolled a 4.
I sure did.
What am I going to do? Yeah, weird. I haven't used the something weird happened reactions nearly enough. I think as you're walking through the field in this like kind of like very contemplative state of thinking about the plight of these goat folk, and you're wandering through the liminal space of the farm through this field, there's also this like general sense of like melancholy here, like a sense of a life left incomplete, something that is undone or not finished, and it makes you sad. And given the liminal nature of the space, I think that there is a weakness in the veil between worlds here at the farm that Hazel, kind of lost in reverie, will step through. And Hazel's going to be in this transitory, like, ley line hub network, you know, it's like this kind of space between spaces, spirit transit hub. I'm trying to think of what that looks like, because this is very wild and weird, but I'm kind of with it. It's like I imagine a very ethereal version, like mirror version of the space. Oh, the chromatic wheel. Yeah, it's like overly vibrant with color, and like instead of like clouds in the sky, you just actually see paths of ley lines cutting their way like a vast like spider web fractal that kind of like is blanketing the land. And I think that's the, you're just here now, and that's you. You've wandered into this place, and that is weird. And let's go with it, I guess. Unless you wanted to mark a gate.
I was gonna say, if I mark a gate, can that still happen? But can I also get a clue?
Sure, sure.
Because I like it. I really don't want to negate that. That's so cool. But yeah, I'll mark.
Flying by the seat of my pants on this one, but I like it. Yeah. Which one do you want to use?
A time you made yourself unhappy just to fit in.
Okay, you want to narrate that now?
I can do it now.
Do it now.
Yeah, I think we see a small Hazel. She's reading one of those children books. There's a witch with a cool hat and a magic wand on the cover. And she loves this book. She's obsessed with it. She found it in a thrift store, and she feels like it was meant to be, like this book is telling her something. And we see her like make her own little witch hat out of like out of fabric. She gets like a wooden stick and gets flowers around it to make a magic wand. And we see that as she grows up, she kind of keeps having like this aesthetic, this witch aesthetic around her. And then one time, she lives with her grandparents here in Moonlight Vale, and they're having guests over. And one time, she, maybe 9 or 10, she runs in and she says, "Granny, Granny, I saw them! I saw the pixies!" And she's like grabbing her hand, and her grandmother is giving this pained smile at the guest, and she's like, "Oh, she's just." She has a very, very vivid imagination. Sweetie, we're not right now. We're talking. She's like, "No, I saw the pixies. You have to come see the pixies." And she's like trying to get them. They don't come to see the pixies. And when the guests are gone, she's put on. They're having a conversation with a capital C at the dinner table. There's a cup of steaming tea in front of her and cookies, and she knows that means that she's in trouble because they're trying to be nice about it, but it's worse because that means she's in really big trouble. And her grandma looks at her and she says, "Sweetie, I know that it's hard for you. I know that you probably really miss your mom and your dad, but witches aren't real, and you're growing up now, and this is getting a little, well, you're going to the big school soon, and I don't think that they still believe in witches there, or pixies, or fairies, or mermaids." And Hazel looks hurt and offended, and she says, "Witches are real. I'm a witch." "No, no, sweetie. You're not a witch. You're just a girl, and that's okay. You don't have to be magic. You don't have to be anything except Hazel. Isn't that just good enough? I really don't think... I think you should take off the hat, honey. And I think you should give that book to me." And Hazel just looks. And she doesn't want to, but she also doesn't want to make her grandmother sad. And she doesn't really like the smile that she gave earlier. And while some of the kids are being mean about it, so she takes off her hat and she gives her little wand with an air of finality. And her grandmother just kind of looks at her in silence, and she says, "There's cinnamon cookies, your favorite." And having not much else for it, having no more dreams of magic and witches and all that kind of stuff, well, next best thing is a cookie with cinnamon.
We see Hazel standing in the chromatic wheel, as we'll call it now. This kind of like mirror of the veil itself, although significantly brighter, colorful, and you can see the ley lines actually manifested in their full pads. Something seems wrong with them, though. Like, they don't seem to be steady. They seem to be flickering or twitching every so often in a way that doesn't strike you as positive. But you do, here's your clue. In this version of the world, overlaying the veil as you know it, the farm here actually is manifesting something very strange and magical. You actually notice that like the flagstone foundations of the building itself are glowing and leaking a lot of arcane energy, so that when you actually notice that there are like glyphs and runes and carvings that glow with this kind of like ethereal teal light, that you have seen similar designs on ruins in the Endless Weald, and you know that the base of the farm, must have been constructed with stone taken from ruins, not in the Endless Weald, I meant ruins in the Singing Mountains. Yeah, like you actually see that the flagstones of this farm were built from ruins you've seen in the Singing Mountains before. So that's your clue. I'll post that here. Now your complication is that we see while Hazel is studying and like looking over these like magical stones, there is like a growing collection of shadows behind her, like little like pooling across the ground like oil that then amass into just a single spot of churning shadow that then forms as a very tall figure with a wide brimmed hat comes like rising up out of the shadow behind Hazel and speaks with a voice multifaceted, calm, but notably inhuman and ethereal, just saying, "A beautiful town to build, a beautiful town to see, a beautiful town made an ancient pact, else a beautiful town it will cease to be." And you turn around and you see this tall figure that is completely obscured in shadow beneath this wide brimmed hat. Its head just kind of like cocked slightly to the side. You can make out a chin beneath it. And it's just this voice that says, "You are not supposed to be here." And it raises a hand towards you as magic begins to collect out of the nearby air and gather in its palm. It's going to cast a spell on you. What are you afraid of happening here, Hazel?
Oh, boy. First of all, I want to say that while people should probably be afraid, Hazel is absolutely delighted. Like, yes, weird stuff. Yeah, I think as he raises, or this creature raises its hand, she gets out her wand and starts firing off a counter spell. And what she's afraid of is going to happen is, well, that the counter spell doesn't work. And that, I guess maybe that she'll be trapped or something, that she won't be able to go back when she should be able to.
Well, it's worse than that. It's worse than that because you are going to go back, but you can never go back because this curse they are casting is going to strike you blind.
Mm.
You can never see the magic again.
Oh no! Yeah, that she would hate that. That would be terrible.
You can roll plus sensitivity.
Okay. Let me look at my items.
So proud of you, Jazzy.
Right, I'm doing it. I can do this. You know what? I think let's say instead of her wand, she pulls out that satchel with the herbs and the quartz, and she like takes out a stone that just brims in her hand, and she holds it up almost like a shield, and it's like meant to absorb the energy that is coming her way.
Fascinating. All right, you mark it, roll with advantage, sensitivity.
Okay, then it's a 12.
Hell yeah, you'll get an extra. Go ahead and narrate what happens. And then your extra benefit is I'm going to give you a clue.
Yeah, I think the creature raises their hand. The spell goes off. She pulls out this crystal, and almost like a shield, it is absorbing all this energy, and it just shimmers around her while the Admiral on her head is like, standing up and croaking very loudly like it's going into battle. And I think the Shadow Lord is, you know, like on the her back is, you know, like all hollowed out, just like the hair standing up, and it's just like lounging. It can't do much. I almost imagine it like going through, but there's just like a lot of very heroic standing going on.
Very cool. I will say that I think as part of this, you will have to go back to the normal world. I think that makes sense as like you're able to like get out of this situation. If that works for you. But yeah, I love that you do. And when you return, you spot something. This will be your clue. You spot muddy cloven hoof prints that are not quite dry, look pretty fresh. kind of in the area of the farm that you emerge out to. You spot those, you clock those. The goat folk passed through here not too long ago. Although I think maybe like the sun is a little bit further in the sky than it should have been. So I think time has like progressed like a little faster when you were on the other side. Very cool. I'll add that clue. Here, I'll add that to your list. What do we want to do now, gang? It sounds like we have some people who want to queue up some vulnerable moves or other community moves to clear some conditions. What do folks want to do?
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about the community moves?
Absolutely, absolutely. It is roughly the same. However, there are some slight, there's like a slight change to it. Mostly it applies to the mechanics that we'll introduce after the resolution of this job. But let me get the move up here. The community move. When you have an intimate moment with another watcher while one of you is engaged in your hobby, you may each clear an appropriate condition. If it is your hobby, you can also stumble onto a clue or receive a useful token from your time spent with the community, and you get to mark a resource in XP. So yeah, because we haven't introduced resources yet, you can still do that. That's not off the table, just that that mechanic mostly feeds into the thing that we'll talk about once this job is resolved. But yeah, clue or get an XP point for doing your hobby.
Well, it is not exactly the best time for stargazing in the middle of the day, unless we want to fast forward to twilight or evening. But if somebody else wants to indulge in their hobby, I would be happy to join someone.
Yeah, I'm fine with a scene with a Hazel because we haven't got one, but I think Kai and Scott are also a really fun team. So if you want to, I'm fine either way.
My hobby is playing the violin, which I feel like is sort of on Kai's nerves at the moment.
It's all about context. Yeah, then. I'm fine with whatever folks decide. Whoever wants a scene with Kai.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really had scenes with the rest of the Watchers yet, so that might be fun.
Yeah, do we want to fast forward to, like, twilight or evening, at least? And we can either have a dance or we can go stargazing.
I think stargazing might be fun, because that might be something easy to kind of join in if we don't know each other that. I mean, we know each other because we're both from the town.
Yeah, so. I think this is great. However you guys want to frame this up, and if we do this, and maybe like another thing or two, like you'll have enough clues to crack an answer, and then we might even be able to like jump into resolving the job, and then be able to do the very fun introduction of the rest of the game.
Hell yeah!
Yeah, then I think that park that we described in the last episode where there was the campfire and all of that, I think that might be where Kai sets up in the evening, and it's like just past the edge of twilight where the first stars are starting to come out, and that would be an easy enough place to find him, I think. And I guess because of battered and bruised, he probably did take a visit to the doctor, to Dylan, and got a couple gauze wraps around him, a couple bandages and things like that.
Yeah, I think Hazel has sort of, after that experience, I think she was both, you know, like delighted and a little bit shaken at how intense that was, but take stayed mostly in the woods and feeling, you know, there's a lot of magical energy under the stars. And I feel like maybe it's a full night. So she's walking up and she has her crystals, which, as we all know, you must sometimes charge under a full moonlight to cleanse the healing powers, etc., etc. So she's kind of walking up and sees you and kind of gives you, you know, like a I saw you nod, and starts very, very seriously. Like there's a science behind it. Like it has to be done properly. She, you know, gets like a black cloth, lays it out. She's picking up her crystals and one by one, kind of putting them on the cloth. And I think immediately Shadow Lord sees you and immediately goes in for pets.
Kai is like, you know, staring into the telescope and stargazing, and the cat will just like rub against his ankle. Hazel Thorn. Hi.
It is I. How are the stars tonight, Stargazer? Are they in position?
Yeah, they're all right where they should be. Which is it's a good sign, I think. That's a good sign, right?
Where else would they be? I mean, are they in position for magic?
Well, that I Hazel, I never dabbled in magic. But you're free to look. If you want to see for yourself, I don't know what exactly you're looking for, though.
Hazel stands up and she has no idea what she's looking for either. So she goes, well, the stars must be in position. And she will like have a look, just stare for a second and goes, yes, yes, they are. They are very much in position. Correct. Very good. Very good.
What kind of spell are you weaving tonight? I mean, if you don't have to say. Never mind. I didn't mean to ask.
No, you can. I mean, I am always happy to teach laymen about magic. This is an important pursuit that more of us should pursue. And she kind of like walks over and starts pointing and she says, well, some of these just need to be cleansed. They fill up with negative auras and evil energies and only the moonlight can purify them. But some of them must simply be charged so that their protection spells can keep on going. Oh, and this one's for a curse.
Right, yeah. Well, I hope everything gets recharged and your curse does what you want it to, I hope.
My curses always do. Why do you look at the stars if it's not for magic? I mean, why bother tracking the celestial bodies if it's not for the power that we can gain from them?
I just like looking. I just think they're pretty, is all. I don't think there has to be anything more to it than that. I think sometimes you can just appreciate the way things look and the way things are, and it doesn't have to be to get power from them. It doesn't have to be transactional like that. Never has been.
No, not transactional, but I mean, looking's fine and all, but don't you want to do something?
I know you sound like my brother.
Ew, don't say that. Don't say that to me ever. I do not sound like a priest. They are my mortal enemy.
Well, you've got to, and Kai will stop himself. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't. I should have remembered. It's been a while since we've talked. You've always been out on the outskirts of town, and
Not like they want me in town, so. That's fine. A witch is always prepared to be burned at the stake.
I don't think it's like that, Hazel. It's... We always need people who can commune with... And we'll kind of look around in the park. We always need people that can do the things that Madeline or Marlene. It's just, I don't know.
I mean, it's a little bit like that. Yeah, they need us, but they also kind of don't want to admit that they do. Right? At least when the sun shines, we don't have to think of the moon.
Yeah. I wonder what it's like in the bigger towns, you know, the cities. Like, they gotta have witches too, right? I wonder what it would be like to be a city witch. Like, just fully urban. Like,
Have a little coffee shop with their potions?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wouldn't that be really cool? I'll bet you there are. I'll bet you there are coffee shop witches and witches
and library
that drive
witches.
Cars. Yeah, that too.
Witches that drive cars. That is so smart. I've been trying to get that broom to work, but it just doesn't.
How are your crystals doing?
Charging. Don't worry, we'll forgive your earlier trespass and put this curse upon someone else.
You were gonna curse me?
Well, yes, you said I sounded like a priest.
Okay.
But I won't now.
Yeah, I'm glad you decided
careful.
Against it. Yeah. I will be. And I think Kai just kind of goes back and stares at the stars some more.
Hazel just kind of looks awkwardly, and you can tell that she was totally joking about the curse and felt like really awkward about it. It's like
Oh, I love that. That's great. Yeah, Kai, if you want to find a clue during that whole ordeal, you're welcome to think on one. I want to say, Scott, do you want to also have some scenes like to clear a condition? What do you want to do?
I was thinking about a scene with Hazel as well.
Yep, so Hazel and Kai, you may both clear a condition. Yeah, I mean, Hazel, you can clear Hounded by Hank Gibbons. You have been out of his way.
And I've been cursing him, obviously.
Yeah.
Crystals.
Exactly, laying curses down. But yeah, Hazel, if you want to do another move here, or community move, yeah, we can frame that scene up and we can figure out who's doing what activity here. I will say, why don't we go ahead and take another 5-minute break? And also, you know what? Because for the sake of just like the playtest, I'm gonna give Scott a free clue from his interaction with Frankie. And just we can throw that on our character keeper just for funsies. Just to have that whole ordeal, just an extra clue just to speed that along.
I was laughing at the end of that because I definitely started that scene like, all right, I'm gonna get some clues out of Mary, and then Frankie walked through the door. I was like, that's all gone now,
never mind.
Who cares? That's how you should play all games. Forget about all the things as soon as a love interest walks in, like, person I can date, goodbye now.
Yeah, I think maybe during the interaction Frankie told you a weird but fun story about how about like this was very like much in keeping with the whole Jelly Mark Jamboree stuff. Let me write this in the chat.
And then if that's the case, we have 4 clues, so I'll come up with something as fast as I can, but we should consider framing up a answer, I think, on break.
All right. Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah, so this clue I'll just give you for free was that an ancestor of the Gonzalez's, a story about them where they allegedly buried their wealth in jars of marmalade that is hidden somewhere in the Vale. Still, it's a funny little story there. Anyway, yeah, let's take five while we reflect on stuff, and we'll go from there.
Cool.
All right, so on the break, we actually decided to just jump into answering the question with the clues and maybe marking some gates. So you have a theory, gang?
We do. So our theory is that the place they are trying to go to is that liminal space on the farm. The clues are, when Crossing Town was founded, goat folk and other mountain kin worked alongside with the humans to build up the town. It was sort of done in the two realms. So the humans were building in this realm and the mountain folk were building in the other realm, also like alongside each other to keep it in perfect balance. The evidence of the local landmark, the farm being constructed with materials from the ruins, from the Singing Mountains, is sort of a gate. And this gnome creature was trying to open it, but it wasn't there anymore. It's in the farm now. And it also more evidence of these two like creatures living amongst each other. The Moody Cloven hoof prints is because they were at that time looking around and scouting and to see like, could they still go there? Is it safe? But at that particular time of the day, they couldn't enter because they meet our last clue, a constellation called the Lightning River is brighter than normal. The Lightning River is sort of like a tarot card kind of metaphor for journeys, spiritual, emotional, like not necessarily a physical one. And that constellation is needed for the gate to fully open for like that many mountain folk. And the ancestors of the Gonzalez's who allegedly buried their wealth in charge of marmalade hidden somewhere in the Vale. This wealth is not money, but it's like some sort of like magic marmalade, energy jelly that allows someone who eats it to transport into the different worlds.
Sorry, energy jelly is like, great.
Yeah, it's like an energy jelly. And they...
Energy jelly,
if you will. And they've like... That knowledge is lost, so a lot of people just think, you know, wealth is money. But they were actually, back then, wealthy because they could go between the worlds. And now that is needed to get all the mountain folk in
there.
That's
fucking cool. Okay. Damn. Was that everything? Anything else anyone wants to add to that? Or is that it?
I think that was everything.
I love
just,
that.
I love the idea of the two worlds and like them setting up this farm on the other side of the Weald and eventually us setting up a farm on this side. Like the, you know, rebuilding how things coexist on different levels.
That's really cool.
A neat idea.
It's a plus one theory. Whoever wants to take a stab at it.
Jazzy.
I did it last time.
Okay. I'll try. It's a four. I've been rolling a two and a one so often this session. It's insane.
So how do we feel about some gates?
Ooh, I love me some gates.
I think we should mark some gates.
All right, go ahead.
I need this theory to be right.
Yeah,
so who's,
it's too cool.
Who's marked the most?
I think you're the only one who has not marked one. Hazel,
so one of y'all take the mystery gate.
Do you want it or should I?
I'll take it if you have another gate that you would like to narrate. Yep. I don't necessarily have one off the top of my head.
I can find one.
I'll narrate a flashback gate.
Yeah, well, you know what? Let's save those for later, but you go ahead and mark them now. Instead, bump it to, yeah, I think that'll make, the theory is correct. There will just be, pursuing it'll be a bit more complicated. Honestly, I think just the opening of a thing is going to be the complicated part. Nothing that's going to be like severe, I'd say. I like that theory a lot. Why don't we frame up the scene for the night then? of what this resolution looks like, of how you expect you want to go about this, and then maybe I'll frame up how it's slightly more complicated. What are you guys thinking?
If it's a ritual, I think Hazel has to like direct us into how to do a ritual.
I think Kai's gonna have to go talk to Val about the Gonzalez family's magic marmalade and like dig some of it up. I think some of it's still probably stored down there. And maybe they've got it in a couple different caches. And so I think we're gonna be running all around.
Did you say you have to go talk to the Gonzalez's, you said? You might need, who knows how much we'll need. You might need extra hands.
That is true. Yeah. Oh, I need to clear a condition. Yeah.
Very good.
Hazel will do start the ritual and wait for her servants to deliver her jelly.
And should we try and get, I guess we should try and get the goat folk there too. Or at least some of them to help us.
I trust they're just going to show up. I could be wrong, but or we could, you know, try and find them in the mountains and
bring. Here's what I'll say. I think if we're cool with it, both in the interest of time and also just like I think it makes sense, is the we'll have Hazel make the night move for the actual ritual thing itself. Aside from that, I don't really require any roles from Kai or Scott. So we can just kind of like role play a little bit of like, we can narrate the Gonzalez involvement between you two and kind of have a little bit of that and then have it all resolved with Hazel's role with you guys kind of doing the setup. So why don't we go ahead and frame up, where do we find Kai Cooper, Scott Sweeney, and Valerie and Frankie Gonzalez? Like what's going on there?
Well, we're probably in like, some field behind their house with shovels out.
I imagine Valerie, yeah, like Frankie's brought shovels from his shed, and like Valerie's probably sitting on the fence post, smoking a cigarette. And every time Frankie walks by her, he just plucks a cigarette out of her mouth, and, like throws it to the ground and stomps it out. And she just pulls like another one out of her box and like lights it up.
Thanks for helping us out with this. I mean, I know ancient legends and weird inner jellies and goat farms. It's a little much.
Hey, I understand. He says, like, as he's like digging a shovel, and he says, personally, I don't really see a real reason to at least try. Never really thought about it, but you seem confident enough, and honestly, that's enough for me. Valerie's just like giving you a withering look, Kai just being like, if you actually think you're gonna find anything, you're a damn fool.
Look, I know it all sounds crazy, but there's something about Hazel's eyes when she's explaining it that just, like, it makes sense, even though it doesn't make any sense.
Valerie blinks, but Frankie just nods. Well, yeah, hopefully Hazel's this doesn't... Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, Hazel's got that way about her, yeah.
That she does. Well, yeah, let's start digging. Hopefully this won't take too long. I do gotta get back to Izzy.
Oh, that reminds me. I meant to, you mentioned, I thought she might like this, and, like, he blushes as he pulls out a bag that has a little cloth doll in it that he sewed for Izzy.
Frankie looks like, he like grins and he says, this is lovely. How did you make this in a couple of hours?
Oh, well, I mean, there were a lot of scraps and things that we had to throw away at the shop, and so I grabbed some of the nicer looking ones, and it didn't take long. You were gonna help me with the table, so I thought it's like a down payment.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you. I'm sure she'll love it. And you guys dig up whatever it is you find. Let's cut to the action, I guess. Like, let's cut over to the farm where I guess you're going to lead a ritual, Hazel. Sure, why not? What does this look like? What's going on?
I think she has, from earlier, like, identified where the ley lines are, and knowing that this Piece of Ruin is the gate. She is, I think she's actually setting up for crystals, which are now fully charged. She takes out, I think, candles that she starts placing around. There is incense there that she's like sticking in the ground. Not in a pentagram, sadly enough. Pentagrams are to keep things, not to transport them. So she is setting up this ritual. And I think what she will try to do is essentially concentrate a lot of magical energy here. Because when you do that, it's like easier, it's malleable. You can do things with it. And when it is concentrated, then she's going to open this gate so that they can go through.
And we like definitely have to paint some runes in glowing marmalade, right?
Absolutely.
I mean,
I am waiting for the marmalade when it comes.
This is yet another use of the magic move. Honestly, I can't justify having this. Let's just do the night move. No, I'm like, no, because like literally, you're opening a fucking portal, man. Like, we're creating custom.
What I do.
This was very much something that Meg and I intended. Of like, it's a much more magical game, so we really expect people to be like, we're making magic moves left and right because there's not a lot of like custom moves in this game per se.
So I'm loving the implications that we're making a move to travel across to the chromatic wheel. Like, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
So that we can keep doing it. So yeah. It's not just the solution. We can keep doing it.
You can just keep accessing the fucking transit hub of the spirits, essentially, the chromatic wheel. Oh, that's so cool. Okay. Yeah, you get to roll plus your sensitivity on this. Damn, this is fucking cool.
All right. Let's see how it goes. That is a 9.
On a 7 to 9, you must also pay 1 resource to successfully use the spell for the first time. I believe you have a resource like as an XP in your tracker there. And the way that this the resource thing kind of like comes into play here is resources are like an abstraction of both goodwill and actual like things you own like amongst the town. So I guess in this case, like, narrate how. Unless you want to open another gate, I was going to say narrate how either some aspect of your extra preparation or forces of the town assist you in completing this. Like whether that's other people or like something like that.
I mean, I think it makes sense to get Marlene involved in this. Yeah. So yeah, I will have absolutely explained to Marlene. And I think, you know, like, this is such a huge spell that she would have probably insisted, like, no, you're not doing this alone. You're not taking that risk, because there's so much that could go wrong. So I think, yeah, I ask a favor / some help for her to assist me here.
Go ahead and narrate the scene and how this resolves. Just narrate the finale of the goat folk job.
Yeah, I think me and Marlene are, you know, setting out the crystal, setting out everything. Marlene does actually start saying words in, like, I think some kind of ancient-ish language. It's not, unfortunately, Latin. It's not Latin backwards, but it is, like, some very cool ancient language. And then I think, like, when this magic sort of, like, starts shimmering, and I think she's, like, doing most of the heavy lifting, and Hazel is more on like controlling it and sort of being the assistant here, being the guide. And I think, you know, like at the end, we see the magic is starting to shimmer. These two worlds are sort of like starting to flicker and blend into each other. And then they start both, don't bite me, they start both like pushing as like the door is opened. And I think that's sort of where Kai and Scott like come rushing in. With the jellies, whether Val and Frank are with them, I'll leave up to you. But they run in and immediately, like, Hazel starts instructing them on the ruins. She has, like, I think colored them, like, for them, because she can't do anything right now except stand here and, you know, do the telepath stance. So they have to, like, color over with the jelly to complete it and make the portal stable and then the goat folk, I think, either, you know, come out of hiding because they see that it's safe, or we have to go a little bit away, and they now have a portal that they can access.
I love that. Why don't Kai and Scott throw in some final narration for the wrap-up of this scene?
I think Kai walks by Val and is like, told you we'd find something. And, you know, takes the jars of marmalade, and we just get a little montage of Kai, like, finds a weird storage unit, or a little like a thing of brushes somewhere in this dilapidated farmhouse, and starts just painting runes on the rocks. What I think Kai doesn't see is like a couple little fireflies just sort of like from the tree line behind him, just sort of dancing and then fading back into the woods. But he places, you know, one of the rocks in probably a circle of some kind on the ground. And it's just like one of the last little rune painted rocks.
I think as we get back to the farm and the ritual starts ritualing, Scott looks like uncomfortable, unsure. He very much like sort of shrinks in on himself because like Hazel seems really sure that she's going to open a portal to another world, but that sounds questionable. I'm going to go with questionable. So he doesn't quite know how to interact with this ritual that's going on. But as Hazel and Marlene are chanting, I think the goat folk are starting to sort of emerge from the shadows in the woods. And as they do, they're humming this like bleeding song, sort of their goat voices warbling. And after a minute, Scott starts like humming along, and then he dashes over and he like grabs his violin and he starts playing along with the song that the goat folk are singing under the chanting.
Love that. And I think with that, we will resolve the goat folk oddity job, which concludes the tutorial of Moonlight Vale. Before we go to Stars and Wishes, we're going to set up the aftermath of this, which is now opening the door to the remainder of our playtest sessions of the rest of the mechanics that we're going to get to explore. So for the reward of resolving the tutorial oddity job, I frame up a scene where a couple of days have passed and each of you find yourselves receiving a letter from Mayor Anna Limney asking you to come to her office at Town Hall. When you show up, you see each other. You're not sure what this is about. But eventually the door to her office opens up and Mayor Limney steps out and goes, "Ah, wonderful. You came. Good. Please come inside," and welcomes you into her office. Offers you anything to drink, and you know, you're welcome to sit. And she seems to have something on her mind, and she's like pacing, and she's not really sure how to like approach the subject. Before she kind of like eventually sits down at her desk and like folds her hands, and, like looks at the three of you all pretty heavily, and she says, "Can I ask you three a question?" Why did you get so involved with those mountain kin a few nights back?
It is the responsibility of all of people of Moonlight Vale to care for its creatures, is it not?
Well, yes. Go ahead.
Besides, they'd lost their home. They didn't really have anywhere to belong, and people shouldn't be left like that.
I just happened to be in the area.
Well, a lot of people in this town, well-intentioned and good-hearted as they may be, may have felt it to be a daunting task and may have ignored it and put it aside, but you three faced it head on. And as I understand it, Mr. Cooper and Mr. Sweeney, you dealt with some skeletons in the foothills? I mean, monsters are no small business. That is very impressive. And Miss Thorne, as I understand it from your mentor, you directly interface with old magics that frankly no one in this Vale, Marlene included, have probably dealt with for many, many generations. I'm very impressed.
Just a trifle for a witch as powerful as I.
Sure thing, dear. Anyway, I find myself impressed, and she like leans back in her chair, folds her arm, and just says, I have something I want to show you. And she like opens a drawer in her desk and pulls out like an old envelope, like it, something that's been like in her desk for probably like years. Like the paper just looks so like fragile, and there's like a wax seal on it, and it's addressed on the back of it to whomever is the mayor at the time of opening this. She says, there was an old resident of our town. I don't believe the three of you ever met him. I was a very small girl when he passed away. I have old memories, but nothing concrete. He actually owned the land that the three of you did whatever it was you did last night. That old farmhouse used to belong to him. And he was the last member of an old tradition in Crossing Town, an organization that called themselves the Community Watch. Back in those times, they dealt with a lot of sort of the magical issues of town, but also helped with life around Crossing Town in general. The magic kind of receded from the Vale in those old days, and after he passed away, no one felt the call to do anything about it. No one felt there was a need for the Community Watch, but I truly, after these last few nights, find myself revisiting this old letter. And I felt like if ever there was a time to open it, now might be the time. Because indeed, there's a little subscript on that also like adds like, you know, open when there's a need for the watch. Kind of, she like breaks the seal and opens it, and she opens up the like letter and reads, my dearest friends, there is an honor and a privilege to carry on such an old tradition. Like my parents and their parents before me, I made this old place my home. I tended to its bounty, its gardens, the animals that wandered in from across the river. Truly, there is no other way. I wish to spend my days and my years. Alas, love had never been part of my destiny, and all I would have given this parcel of land to have since passed on or moved beyond this small town. I cannot fault them. It's a difficult life, one that must be chosen, one that imparts great duty to this town and to that which remains unseen. Enclosed with this letter is the deed to the old farm. If the town should find someone worthy, I'd ask it to go to them. Otherwise, consider it my gift to Crossing Town and its people. I'm sure someday someone will take up the watch. The reason I've called you here today is because I feel for the first time in many years, I think Crossing Town would benefit from a founding of its watch again, and was wondering if you three would like to be its founding members to continue to assist the town as you have. I won't speak light of it. It is going to ask a lot of responsibility from you if this is something you'd like to occupy your time with, but truly I believe that, well, Crossing Town needs folks like you to help out again should anything like this come to pass. And besides, with things changing as they have been, with outside influences and otherwise, what do you say? You say no and the game stops right here. Like, we're not going to play anymore. And it's just like, that's the end of the game, but...
Well, my brother says I should get a job, so, you know, this'll do.
I'm always feeling like people don't really see me as part of the town. So this would be a great way to connect and like work in with people.
Hazel kind of gives them both a look like, well, that's not very formal or cool of them, these reasons. So she flicks her hair and steps forward and says, aye, you may count on the magic of the witches of Moonlight Vale to aid you in this quest.
Incredible. As another side matter, enclosed with the deed of the old watcher, there are a couple things you actually get to do now. First of all, you now have access to a new move called the Rural Wisdom move, which I actually altered this from its original text today because I had this idea for it, but let me read it out loud for you. This is basically, for those of you familiar with Brindlewood Bay, this is our version of the Gold Crown Mysteries move. So you now have access to the old watcher's journal. So once per job, whenever a watcher says, this reminds me of something I read about in the old watcher's journal, you can then describe how something in the situation almost perfectly parallels something that happened to the old watcher. And you get to establish like what happened, when and where this happened, what the situation was, and how the old watcher eventually overcame the problem with an utterly dead simple solution, such as like giving the TV a good thumping to make it work again, you know, like stuff like that. So it's, you have the Rural Wisdom move now, which is our version of Gold Crown. The other thing is that you each get to narrate for yourselves one item the old watcher bequeathed to whoever wishes to become new members of the watch, and you may add that to your quiet retreat.
I think Hazel will get a broom. Whether that was like a magical broom or just used for sweeping, we'll never know. But she has a broom.
I think Scott gets a pair of scissors that are like impossibly bright and sharp even after all this time, and have some of those same symbols that we saw carved in the pieces from the Sleeping Mountain etched along one side of them.
And I think Kai gets the old watcher's boots that were made for walking, and they fit just right.
Very good. We're going to wrap up the session. I'm going to kind of explain now how the game folds out from here. So you have now founded the new generation of the Community Watch of Crossing Town. Which you have been given the old farm as sort of like to use as you see fit, whether it's like a headquarters or just a place to store equipment. Like it's part of the deed. You could ignore it, or you could just entirely begin customizing it. We'll talk about that in a moment. But now we're going to actually enter the phase structure of the game when we play these next few sessions. We're going to start in the dawn phase, where we get to explore a bit more of the farm itself and kind of we'll get to answer some questions about it. We will then, from then on, you will then get to decide which phase you are going to focus your efforts as the Community Watch on, whether you want to focus on the daytime or the nighttime. And whichever phase you're not focusing on will be the unseen phase. And we'll get to explore the lives of the people of Crossing Town and then see stuff that happens. And then same thing, you know, and then during the night phase, during the dusk phase, as it were, we're going to start introducing these mechanics for about now that resources and responsibilities how work. Because now that you're members of the Community Watch, you actually have to balance your time with your actual like day-to-day responsibilities and your Community Watch responsibilities. Each of you has a responsibilities number that we generated during character creation. You have to meet that number. It's kind of like Golden Burdens from Trophy Gold a little bit. You have to meet that number with your resources each dusk phase. And if you don't, something happens to kind of represent where you may neglect areas to focus on, outside influences will begin to affect. I'm going to have some stuff ready for you guys next week, because you've also unlocked what is called layer one of the town sheet. This is basically how we created, this is essentially the community center from Stardew Valley, which is like, you now have unlocked the ability to like spend resources on upgrades for the town and like things you can do. It's still like anytime you want to spend, if you ever want to advance, it's 6 resources. That's just by default. You can always take an advance if you want to spend 6 resources. But you still have to spend resources on the on this other one as well. So it's like kind of similar to like not similar. It's like you're gonna be generating a lot more XP points in the game, but you also have an actual like kind of resource spend of like managing like, do I want to advance my watcher, or do I want to advance in like the town, or do I want to like focus on these other areas of the game. So we're going to be able to like play around with that and field out next time. So I'll have some things for you guys set up for that to discuss that. I think that's all. I think that's all that we're going to be able to explore now, and we'll explore community jobs and an oddity job for the remainder of our playtest as what it's like to be members of the community watch of Crossing Town. Let's go to Stars and Wishes, and then we'll have an end of session scene.
I can start. For Alex, I mean, I fully choked on my tea when Esbel, you said, if you actually think you're gonna find something, you're a damn fool. it was just so out there, like out of nowhere, in this very like high magical strange session, just like Val being like, you're a damn fool, just absolutely cracked me up. Yeah, I think I love Hank Gibbons. Just, you know, from the get-go, the vibes were rancid. I really like that. That was nice. And I really liked the development of Marlene and Hazel in this session. I really liked like Marlene getting serious with Hazel and being like, no, I am actually teaching you stuff, and there are like responsibilities that we have. And I thought that was fun, given their like very the dynamic last session, and then now, I thought that was like a really fun progression to see. I think you also just do great in explaining this in parts and like explaining, okay, this is what we're gonna do next time, this is what it's gonna look like, which is very fun. For Kevin, I really liked Kai's scene with Eli. I really liked how at the end he was like, oh, I got it, and just like ran off. that felt very cinematic and like very true to who Kai is as a person, to just sometimes be like, well, I'm off now, goodbye. And I really liked his scene with Hazel, and sort of that, like, you could really feel this awkward, like, I know you because we are of the same age in the same town, but also I like don't really know you kind of vibe. Like, they didn't feel necessarily as like best friends, but they did feel as people who kind of grew up alongside each other in very different ways, and I thought that was really fun. And I just love everybody's like absolute mundane reactions to Hazel just saying the wildest shit. It's so funny to me. And I really love that everybody's kind of having that kind of reaction to her. For Patrick, absolutely love how Scott was just like, I'm on Frankie. I'm here for it. I ship it. It was just very fun. I also loved like you coming in all like hyped, and then like this kind of one-upping anxiety battle that you had with the I forgot her name, but the person from the tailoring store.
Mary.
Yeah, that was great. And I mean, the doll was super cute. Just absolutely cute. And I loved everybody's, like how we did the theories. We did like 2-in-1 session, which is a lot. But I loved how everybody contributed, like what we made of it. Wishes, very interested to test out the rest of these mechanics. I would love to have a scene with Scott next time and kind of feel out what the dynamic between Hazel and Scott is. Yes, I feel like it could be very fun and wild. I'm very interested to see like where exactly it's gonna land. And yeah, very interested to see how this watch is starting and what we'll do.
This was super cool. I love the mystery, and I love the theorize and how especially that second one ended up changing a lot about the world, and like this is now going in a different direction than I expected at the beginning of the session, which is super cool. Kevin, I loved your description of the autumnal night market at the beginning. Was really cool and very thematic, and got the lily pad hat. But also like you sort of mentioned or coined the chromatic wield as like a joke, but that really hit and influenced the rest of the session super deeply. Like Alex, I love how much you picked it up immediately and interpreted it as that like hyper saturation of everything in this weird other world. But that just we kept coming back to it, and it kept spinning out into something cooler and cooler. So thank you for that phrase, Kevin. Jazzy, I love how much Hazel is like the vibomancy of it all. Like she's just, I don't know, things just don't feel it. I'm not feeling it right. Like everything just has to hit just right. It has to be simpatico. It's wonderful. And I also just love the like none more goth, like black magic kawaii cuteness of Hazel, where everything is deadly serious and dark and curses and familiars, and how she refuses to let someone tell her that no, it isn't. Like she's not obstinate about it. She'll back down after she has the little argument, but like she won't let people tell her that this isn't real. And just. It is I was a wonderful
That was a star for me. Just being like, oh, hey, Hazel,
moment.
it is I. Hazel has huge theater kid energy.
Oh God, yes. And Alex, again, the skeleton antics at the beginning were great. The like skeleton with the telescope and the eye, like that was all just wonderful. And then I so many stars for bringing on Frankie. Like I'd look through the list of NPCs. I was, oh, there, oh, I could see that. And I got to Frankie. I was like, oh, I could really see that. Like that would be nice. And he walked through the door, and I just dropped everything and pounced. So thank you so much for bringing him in. Delightful. Wishes. Yeah, similarly, I wanna connect with Hazel and see like how we get on. And I do want to evolve my relationship with Kai beyond I annoyed him that one night and then we sort of ran around. So I definitely want to take the next step in that and see where we grow to. And I am fascinated to see what the next set of mysteries, like do they sort of come in pairs? Ish. Yeah, I'm looking forward to see what happens next.
We're figuring that out.
All right. I have some stars. Big superstar to Xylobones. I will never not star that. Star to Hank Gibbons. I hate him, but rampant froggery was just a wonderful little phrase. In the Marlene scene with Hazel, I started writing because she was like, there's a dark evil. And I'm like, oh yeah, we're gonna get some like crossing town, Moonlight Vale, deep lore. And she's like, it's bureaucracy. And I just had to like draw a sad little line through it. Although she's not wrong, but I'm not what I was expecting. Star to Magic Marmalade, fantastic. Star to Coffee Shop Witches and Car Witches. I don't know why. Those were fun. I really like how the vulnerable scene in this game differs from the vulnerable scenes in the other CFB games that I've played, because there is that shared backstory. And I guess you could kind of do this in public access as well, where it's like, oh yeah, you know, we grew up in the same town, we might have crossed paths with each other. But I think because of the small town community proximity that's sort of enforced in this game, I feel like it's a lot easier to have that sort of dichotomy, and I really like it. It's really fun. I'm gonna lean into that probably a lot. Wishes, if this was a longer game, like, I'd be really fascinated in watching Hazel's development from Theater Kid Witch, because we've already seen that she's really got like her own kind of powerful witchy skill set. And throughout the session, multiple times, I kept thinking, like, this is a world with magic. We've defined that. It is observed. It is not like our world, where if somebody like Hazel existed in it, we would just be able to write them off as a loony. And so, like, having to balance that sort of back and forth of, like, oh, you were really gonna curse me. How much of that do we believe? And it's, and then there's also the whole politeness aspect of, we don't talk about it during day. There's just a lot of really cool things to sort of like lean into there. But I also, like I said, in a longer game, I would love to see Hazel's development into how this job would change that character when the problems and the ways to deal with them become very, very real. And transition from that place of, I'm just pretending to, this is what I really actually am. And maybe we'll still get that. We have a couple more sessions together. And yeah, just more interaction then between the two worlds. I'm really eager to just keep working on that relationship. And if this gateway is going to be used in the future, I don't know. We'll see. But that's what I'm excited about.
Yeah, I mean, stars to echoing everything that's already been said, the lily pad hats was a delightful little touch. I love that so much. I know that Meg's gonna lose her mind at that. I really enjoyed Scott's crush on Frankie so much. Was not expecting that, and I loved it immediately. I love that you just leaned all in on that, and I was like, fantastic. This will be interesting. I know that now I guess Frankie will have to be the first unseen I do for y'all, because you can explore his life a little bit more in depth. That'll be fun. yeah, I really, really like the scene between Eli and Kai, because we had like talked about them being related, but I don't know. There's this kind of underlying, you know, core theme of Moonlight Vale is this kind of like pastoral melancholy that felt echoed in even like these two brothers, how they interacted. Like there was like a distance, but like a peace still. It was weird and cool. I liked it. Yeah, I Hazel's scene in what we call the chromatic wheel, which Star for the name of that, I really did think that was awesome. You know, I do struggle with like keeper reactions sometimes in Moonlight Vale plays. I'm like, what's a good reaction here? Because this game is not, you can't die. I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm gonna have you transition to a liminal other world of magic and stuff and deal with the problems there. Why not? And that really, I feel like that colored the rest of the session in terms of like where the theories went. So stars to that. Yeah, I felt really satisfied with the kind of the, you know, even though we were kind of like rushing through it to be like, to get it done in this session, so we could have the rest of the playtest devoted to the actual like full game mechanics. Still felt good. Still felt like really like paced out well, and I was satisfied with where it went. So that was big stars there. Wish-wise, I'm very much looking forward to getting to now kind of explore and play out the balance of different mechanics for the remainder of this, so we can kind of like see how that comes into play and how that like feels. I might do a little bit of tweaking between sessions just to kind of get it into like a state that I feel like is the best way to go about it. And yeah, I don't know. I'm just excited to see what story will kind of emerge out of the remainder of our playtest here. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Any other stars or wishes? Nope. Then before we go, because you guys got your first supernatural clues this session, a little end of session scene where we see crossing town at night. We see Main Street running out from the town hall. The decorations of the Jellymar Jamboree have been cleared away. The town is quiet. And eventually Main Street runs up a small hill, one just tall enough to see every rundown building and flickering streetlight. Standing atop this hill is a tall figure, one seemingly made entirely out of shadow, obscured by a wide-brimmed hat. The stranger gazes down at the town, watching as lights begin to gather around them, flittering from nearby flowers and trees. And then they speak. From yonder years of fortune fair, mortal kind came with gift and song, to strike a bargain for homes to claim, a place for which two worlds did belong. The figure lets the last word hang into the air, watching the fluttering lights and winged creatures dissipate back into the foliage. Then, they too tip their hat and melt into the forest, eyes still focused on crossing town below. See you all later.